Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC Radio and WNYC.org. Good morning. I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. He's on assignment, but he will be back Monday. 2 years ago, Mayor Bloomberg announced an ambitious and unprecedented plan to reduce poverty in New York City. Here he is from the 2006 State of the City Address.
Today, I'm committing to a major reduction in the number of children, women, and men who live in poverty in this city over the next 4 years. To that end, this year, we'll launch a public-private task force modeled on our task force to end chronic homelessness that will attack chronic unemployment and poverty in the homes and neighborhoods where the need is greatest. We'll launch our first pilot program in three communities where the problems have long been entrenched: Bushwick, Melrose, and Bedford-Stuyvesant.
Well, it's 2008, halfway to that four-year plan. Today, we'll take stock of the mayor's commitment. Joining me is Linda Gibbs, Deputy Mayor for Health and Human Services. Also here is Neil DeMoss, a reporter for City Limits Investigates. The latest issue of that magazine takes a close look at the Bloomberg anti-poverty program. Linda, Neil, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Amy. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to be here.
Linda, let's start with you. The mayor gets a lot of props from advocates for even taking this problem on. Define the Bloomberg administration's approach toward reducing poverty. Liberal, radical, independent, conservative, bold, or just a retooling of old initiatives? What is it?
Well, I think it's pragmatic and outcome-focused. It's a very innovative and ambitious agenda that focuses on reducing poverty and improving the lives of low-income New Yorkers. And so in over the past year, since the investments were announced, we've implemented over 30 programs. And these range from education to skills development, work support benefits, a variety of approaches that are evidence-based. And for each and every one of them, we're going to be tracking their success. The mayor has committed in this process that what we want to do is to be clear about which of these innovative new ideas in fact work, and then support those going forward. And perhaps more uniquely for this work, for those that don't work, we'll shift the money out of those programs. Don't keep the programs that aren't producing the results going. Move the money into things that are proving success. And so in taking this on, the mayor has done something unique that many local politicians are not willing to do, which is to say the word poverty and to put his commitment behind it and try new things. And he's not afraid of taking those risks as long as they are tied to that evidence-based evaluation to prove whether or not the taxpayer dollars are being invested wisely.
I know it's just 2 years in, but are there any programs that you're seeing now that might be cut?
No, it's too early. This past year has very much been a year of building, and you have to allow the time for the program recipients to get through the program and have, from their point of graduation or exit or completion, mm-hmm. a chance to demonstrate whether or not the outcome is being achieved. We're seeing, on the other hand, some of the programs that have been in place for over a year, some promising signs. So our CUNY ASAP program, which focuses on increasing the rate of graduation of two-year degree students in CUNY, the cohort of 1,100 students who began in September, over 92% of them continued into their second semester. Hmm. And that for two-year programs across the country, only 20% of students that enroll ever get a degree. So that's, for instance, a very promising early sign. And that's really what we are working with at this point, looking for those early signs, trying to shore up and give a good chance for the programs which perhaps are slower to get off the ground or having some startup struggles, But within a reasonable amount of time moving forward, also being willing to make that call about whether something just isn't going to work.
Neil DeMoss, you say in your City Limits article that for every new program the city has unveiled, there's another one running in place or moving backward. Can you provide some examples?
CUNY ASAP is one example of a program that was not running in place, but one that was already in the works. I think before this new poverty initiative happened. I think
that's
actually
not right, Neil. And there are some examples of some expansions. Neil did a fabulous job, and I spent a lot of time working with him and looking at some of these programs. And it's the report he's just produced is great. CUNY ASAP is in fact one of the new ideas.
It's a new program. I will give you that. I think everyone is very happy that the mayor is saying poverty, and you're right that this is something that has not happened in the city for a long time. To some degree, that's a factor of the sort of low bar that's been set by previous administrations, and the fact that you have 1.5 million people living in poverty and probably about an equal number living near poverty, and it's been something that the city really has not grappled with for a while. The question I've tried to answer in the article is this a program, are these 31 new programs something that really can achieve this major reduction that the mayor's been talking about? And I think there are definitely some promising signs. I think there's some places where it's questionable whether it's going to be able to do that.
I think one of the ones that you pointed out, Neil, was, for example, the mayor has unveiled these cash incentive programs, paying people for doing things like taking their children to doctor's appointments or for regular attendance at schools. That's great. At the same time, the Administration for Children's Services has closed some daycare centers. So there seems to be sort of one step forward, one step back. Linda, I'm sure as deputy mayor, you're trying to get all of these different agencies that intersect with low-income people to cooperate on all of this. Do you have any control over how, it does seem to send a mixed message, doesn't it, to want people to be able to participate in some of these programs that you're offering at the same time? For example, focusing on child care. Child care seems to be a main component for a single mom, for the working poor, in order to be able to participate in some of these programs or to take a part-time job. So how do you explain that sort of disconnect?
Well, in this commission set of recommendations, what they focused on are areas where some new initiatives beyond what traditional programs already exist in agencies might be able to change the current dynamic in a way that is not currently working for some of our families in poverty. So as an example of that, how can some of our workforce development programs be more tailored and targeted to the needs of high concentration poverty neighborhoods, both in terms of what the underlying workforce skills are in those communities, as well as the prospective job opportunities? And so rather than have the expectation that individuals in those communities who have been marginalized by the economy, that they reach out and make use of traditional workforce engagement programs, how can we specifically tailor some programs to fit the unique needs? And so it was looking for those places between agencies where the collaboration can produce a better result for communities that have not been as well served. And on the child care front, this has been a tremendous lesson that we learned during welfare reform in the 90s, which is that the investments in child care were a huge reason that we saw an increase in the employment of low-income mothers. And what we're trying to do through the child care tax credit that emerged from the commission's deliberations was to mimic the lessons that came from that, plus the lessons that came from the work incentives of the EITC, the Earned Income Tax Credit, and build a child care tax credit that both provides a reward for going to work through a refundable tax credit in the form of child care support. So it's combining those two things and adding the mayor invested $50 million and it will serve 49,000 households. So a huge investment on the child care support side for working families to assist them in their efforts to get more deeply involved in the workforce.
Why not just give people the money for child care instead, rather than give them the tax credit? Isn't that sort of delaying the benefits of that for a full tax year?
It's the what it does is it ensures that the dollars are connected to the employment. And this was where the EITC, when in the 90s, the evidence from the increases in employment of women who were formerly on welfare were attributable half to welfare reform, the public assistance rule reform, and half to the investments in EITC and child care. And as a work incentive, as a reward for achieving employment and keeping employment, then the payment associated with the child care, the reimbursement for child care costs.
So this was something that was done because it was seemed to be an easier mechanism for dispersing this rather than just cutting a check?
A more powerful direct incentive based on the individual's own actions.
Neil, your reaction to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a theme to a lot of these new programs, which is theme to, you know, a lot of the poverty programs in the last 15 years, which is you want to make sure people aren't getting something for nothing. And I certainly understand that impulse. But I think there can be a disconnect between you know, what the programs are and what the actual what people's actual lives are. As you mentioned, a child care tax credit is useful as an incentive. Is it necessarily going to enable someone to go out and get a job knowing, okay, if I can come up with the cash to pay for child care next April 15th, I'll get a benefit back? Similar issue with the issue of welfare sanctions. You know, right now you have one in four able-bodied welfare recipients who are currently under sanction for, you know, not meeting the rules for one reason or another. A lot of times, and I've talked to tons of people in this situation, you know, a lot of times it's because the mail didn't come, they didn't get notice of a meeting, it's because, you know, they haven't jumped through the right bureaucratic hoops. That's something that could very easily, well, I don't want to say easily, I mean, you know, reforming bureaucracies is never easy,
right,
but it's something that the city could address. And it is something that has not been part of the Poverty Commission process.
Amy Eddings in for Brian Lehrer. He'll be back on Monday. I'm speaking with Linda Gibbs, Deputy Mayor for Health and Human Services, and Neil DeMoss, author of Building a Better Bootstrap. Can Mayor Bloomberg really tackle poverty one incentive at a time? It's published by City Limits magazine. I wanted to move on to another initiative, if I may, food stamps. Really in the news recently, kitchens, food pantries are saying their visits are up 20%. We know the price of food is jumping, is going skyward. But the Independent Budget Office says 27 to 39% of people eligible for food stamps still don't get them. I know this has been a big push by the Bloomberg administration in conjunction with the city council to enroll more people. Linda, Access NYC is this internet initiative that has been launched as part of the Bloomberg administration's fight against poverty. Neil, why hasn't this been working to change those figures?
It's been working in a limited fashion. Again, we're talking about a very low bar that was set, and that the Giuliani administration really was trying to discourage people from applying for food stamps in any way possible, even though food stamps are something that doesn't really cost the city much of anything. But, you know, it seems like the increase in food stamp receipts has sort of gotten stuck. And, you know, there are things that the city, it seems like, could be doing that they're not. One of the things that drives food stamp advocates crazy is that the city is continuing to insist on finger imaging. For everybody who wants food stamps, they have to come in and get their fingers scanned. Not that it's a problem that people, you know, should be tested to make sure they're not defrauding the system, but just every time you have to make a trip, it's another obstacle to applying for food stamps.
Can I jump in here, Amy?
Sure, Linda.
Is this a good time?
Yes.
So I think it's a great example, the food stamps, of how we can use traditional public assistance benefits, and I use that, you know, generically, to support low-income working New Yorkers. And so the programs like food stamps, like Medicaid, that were formerly tied only to public assistance, now have been leveraged with a lot of work on the bureaucratic side. And thanks for the, it is tough sometimes to make these large bureaucracies reform to achieve these kind of really fundamental changes. But now we're seeing that those benefits are more often in being received by folks who have left public assistance and are employed and are critical supports to help them in that transition. And so on the food stamp side, for instance, the mayor absolutely, absolutely is very committed to retaining all of the integrity actions that decreased the fraud in former public assistance programs and improved the quality such that we can demonstrate to the taxpaying public that these are dollars well worth being spent. And at the same time, we have dramatically increased. The increase in the food stamp enrollment has been tremendous under this administration, and the largest increases have been in the working households. With that being said, I would also point out in this most recent period, in the remainder of the state where they eliminated finger imaging, while the city did not, their growth in the food stamp enrollment is lower than the city. So what we're demonstrating is that we're able to increase enrollment, get the eligible individuals in receipt of their benefit without diminishing the integrity protection.
But I sort of see where Neil is going on this. In some ways, I just feel like it sounds like it should be a lot simpler. Access NYC allows you to print out your application for food stamps, but like he mentions in his article, you still need that face-to-face interview to prove who you are. You still have to prove your eligibility. Shouldn't it be simpler? I mean, I'm going to get a tax rebate from the Bush administration without doing anything more than filing my tax return. Can't we link people of a certain income automatically to these programs so that they're automatically counted as people who are eligible so they don't have to prove their eligibility all the time, that they get linked up to all of these services?
And we are moving in that direction, and this is you made mention of Access NYC, and the next step that we'll be taking this summer with our online application process is to, in fact, allow people to send in their application with a push of the button rather than printing it out and then walking down to the office. In some cases, you will always want the face-to-face, that moment when somebody is in crisis and is in need of critical cash assistance or food assistance is a time that you want them to get the benefits, but you also want to connect with them in order to see that they're getting the broader support beyond that payment today to pay the bills that is necessary in order to allow them to be lifted out of poverty into economic independence. And so in many programs, the face-to-face is a critical component of program success.
Neil,
not in every program. Many of them can be more automatic, and we are moving to use the technology that we have now in order to achieve that.
Neil DeMoss, what's your take on the need to balance access with fighting fraud? Where should the presumption go? I'm thinking of post 9/11, that rollout of air conditioners. People could apply for air conditioners if they're, you know, because of concerns that 9/11 dust had gotten trapped in their air filters, and we found out later that there were people in the middle of Queens who received free air conditioners. You know, fraud was rampant, but the presumption was let's get as many people in as possible. The presumption was there was a great need for this. So where do you stand on balancing need versus fighting fraud?
Yeah, I mean, you obviously have to find a point where you're, you know, a balance point. I think right now we're catching a tiny number of cases of fraud and ruling out a large number, you know, excluding a large number of people who are actually deserving. And I think, you know, definitely things like being able to apply online will be an improvement. But, you know, there's a huge gap we're talking about. You know, we are talking about 20-25% of the people who are eligible not getting food stamps. And it needs more than a better website, I think, to achieve that. And I think it's a first step. But there's a lot of questions about, you know, what are the second and third and fourth and fifth steps going to be?
Deputy Mayor Gibbs, let's look forward, if I may. What's the mayor doing to ensure that these initiatives survive beyond his time as mayor?
Creating a center that has an evaluation team is critical to that. And all too often in the social services, we create programs, we have fabulous ideas, there's a lot of excitement around them, the resources are put in the agency, and then no one comes back and asks the question, did it work? And that makes us vulnerable. We have under-evaluated our programs broadly. By building a research component and putting all of these programs to the test, we believe the numbers will talk for themselves. If the programs can show that they're having an impact, what we know is that it will offset what is often the very high cost to the public associated with all of the interventions from a variety of agencies for families who are in need. And so not only will we see people who are better off, but we will see the reduction in costs in other systems where the dollars are spent less wisely.
But do you think that we'll have enough feedback by the time the mayor leaves office to have this proof in place?
And that is that's what we'll be doing in this next year, putting those program results that we have in hand in place so that we can institutionalize programs where they have evidence to support it. But I think what is more important is that we're trying to institutionalize the value of evaluation and outcome-based measurement and institutionalizing that practice on these set of programs, but also looking for ways that we can take that and bring it more routinely into the social service agencies to demonstrate how the broader baseline of programs that are in place are similarly functioning to a cost-effective way, in a cost-effective way, mm-hmm. To support the clients that are being served.
Neil DeMouse, is Linda Gibbs dreaming?
I don't think he's dreaming. I think the big question everyone's asking is, once you get the data, how do you scale it up? Just to take one specific example, this CUNY ASAP program, which seems very promising, it's basically a program to give free tuition, free books, and a lot of extra counseling to community college students, who specifically choosing community college students who don't need remedial education. The question is, then how do you take that, scale it up to the entire community college, needy community college population, and where do you get the money from it? And I think that's a huge question that isn't answered in these programs, is how do you take these small experimental things that are sort of targeted and trying to do incremental things and then turn into something that's going to address the 1.5 million people in poverty?
Well, we will definitely continue to keep our eye on this. Thank you so much, Neil DeMouse, author of Building a Better Mouse Bootstrap, Can Mayor Bloomberg Really Tackle Poverty One Incentive at a Time? It's published by City Limits Magazine. And thank you to Linda Gibbs, Deputy Mayor for Health and Human Services with the Bloomberg Administration.
Thanks, Amy, and thanks, Neil.
Thanks.
Coming up, Kosher Chic. Stay with us.